This episode is sponsored by ByHeart. Hold on, y'all. With all this talk about making babies that we love to do, let's talk for a second about feeding those little miracles when they come. ByHeart is an infant nutrition company that started with a simple mission: make the best formula in the world. When chest feeding isn't an option, ByHeart's clinically proven easy-to-digest infant formula is there for you. Their patented protein blend gets closest to breast milk. Plus, ByHeart is made with certified clean ingredients and no soy, corn syrup, GMOs, or palm oil. And it's the only U.S.-made infant formula with globally sourced ingredients to use organic, grass-fed whole milk, not skim. ByHeart also happens to be clinically proven for easier digestion, less spit up, and softer poops versus a leading infant formula, which, trust me, you're gonna want. So tell me, you curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code QUEERFAM for a limited time. Additional terms and conditions apply. Right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go. This episode is brought to you by Ana Luisa, Thrive Cosmetics, and EveryPlate. We are very excited to have them on board making our show a possibility.
Welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk. I'm Jamie.
I'm Robin.
And we're your hosts.
Let me show you.
Love is love. If you don't have to make a family by taking a traditional ride. If these ovaries could talk, you would say.
How do I get the sperm through custom?
I am a lesbian.
So gay.
We need to tell our story.
It's not your nuclear family anymore. It's not just your mom and dad thing.
We're not ruining these little humans.
Not for the gay reason. Just
because
we stay.
Hi, guys.
Oh, God. Hi. Jamie.
Robin.
Things are, Jamie and I just had a meeting with our agent guy, who's amazing. And he was talking about being at this wedding and how everybody was vaxxed or had done a test and they all didn't have masks on. And I just had such anxiety. Like, how are you now that we are, I mean, we're supposed to be able to take the masks off outside.
Right. So in New York, they've said
that the CDC, that's nationwide.
Oh, nationwide. Yeah. If you're outside, you don't have to wear a mask anymore.
Unless you're in a group of a large group of strangers. So that's like a sporting event or.
Well, it's like, it's a little crazy. And I feel like New York is taking our time to actually adhere. New York is really good about wearing the mask.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Everybody on the street is in a mask. And people are, I feel like people are afraid to take the mask off.
I am afraid of the social, like, you know, I'm stigma, like I'm going to be yelled at if I take, so I have it on chin and then I pull it up and take it down, pull it up and take it down.
I was just at a birthday party, an 8-year-old's birthday party yesterday, and all the moms were talking about how awkward it is, and we're wearing it like halfway down so that we can pull it right back up if we see somebody staring at us funny. Like, it's like a weird stigma. You're not sure how to do it.
But there's also like this anxiety. There was this really cool article in the Times that was talking about this, about how we're going to have to let go of this anxiety as we start to become vaccinated and all that jazz, like that we're going to have to put it in its proper place. You know what I mean? Like we get in cars, like people die in cars and people have accidents and there's mitigated risk there. And we're going to need to move toward moving our fear over there. But It's hard.
It is. It's weird. Like, we've been holding this.
Yes, as a year,
you know,
not just a country, but a world, like globally.
As a world, we are
the
all
whole,
holding
the whole planet's
this.
Tiny little shoulders are up to our planet's ears. I wonder if, like, will we ever, like, will masks ever be out of our lives, or will it be like when you get sick, you start wearing
it's a new norm. Masks are not going
took
anywhere.
The subway with the kids this weekend to like lacrosse or some nonsense, and I was like, oh my God, like it's starting to get a little more crowded. I'm like, what's it going to be like that time when you have to touch the pole? Because like right now I cannot touch things, or when someone sits down next to you, I'm going to have anxiety.
I take the bus with my daughter, the public bus, to school every morning. They're getting more and more crowded. Yeah. And so like I'm holding on now. Like I have to hold on to get on the bus. You have to hold on.
Yeah, you do.
So that's been interesting. And there was a guy that didn't have his mask on the bus. And I made Rose move down to the other end. And she was like, why are you moving? I was like, I'll tell you later.
Shh, I'll tell you at home. Not now. I'll tell you at home. But, I wish I had a dollar for every time I've said that to my kids. Not now. I'll tell you later.
Don't look that way. Don't look that way right now. So, and then inevitably they look exactly right at the thing you're telling them not to look at. But at this birthday party, it was funny because one of the moms was just like, I feel really awkward. I don't know how to socialize anymore. This is so weird. Because we had our masks off. It was an outdoor party. And there was wine.
Well,
because
we have nothing to
beverages.
Talk about. We've talked.
I know. We were all just
like, get your vaccine.
Yeah. And then I realized that I realized I had my mask off. And then I was like, oh my God, I have not looked at my chin hairs. And I don't even know.
You have that one like black one coming right out in the center.
I was like, what?
Now I'm checking for my one hair. I have one hair that comes in sometimes.
You only have one?
Just the one right there.
I
got to handle that. I've been getting really roped into this infomercial on the Bravo TV about this wax that you just like strips that you just put right on your face and rip it right off. And I've been thinking about buying that.
I don't want to wax myself. I've tried. It's not fun. It doesn't work. And it's messy.
Oh, it does work.
And it gets sticky.
It does work. Now we've gotten into a very weird area that I'm uncomfortable with. So let's give
weird.
A special thank you to our newest patrons. And let's not talk about their facial hair.
No.
We've got three new Patreon supporters this week. Welcome to our community. All right, Lillian Dubiel.
No, I think it's Lillian Dubiel.
Lillian cannot use the phone. Do you know that's from Eddie Murphy? Lillian Dubiel.
Lillian Dubiel.
Lillian Dubiel. Francis Hughes, I can do that. And Emily J.
Thank you so much, guys.
Oh, but wait, Jamie.
Why are you so excited?
Because listen, last week we had this new Patreon member named Louisa. And
my God.
We ripped up her name, of course. But then she sent us, we didn't ask for this. She sent us this voice memo. Let's play it for everybody.
Yeah, you guys are going to think we planted this.
We didn't do it at all.
Hi, Jamie and Robin. Hope Helen is behaving herself. This is Louisa calling from Australia. I'm your newest Patreon supporter and your biggest fan down under. You've been by our side throughout our journey in growing our family. I wanted to share something that I think your listeners should know. I'd mentioned to my wife a few times that I wanted to become a supporter of the podcast, but I wasn't sure if it was feasible in these uncertain times. She asked how much it would cost, and I realized I had no clue. When I went online, I learned that 1 month at the entry level is less than the price of a cappuccino. So please let the people know that supporting our stories is both important and in budget. Looking forward to laughing and crying along with you next week. Bye.
Is that not the sweetest?
Can you believe her?
Like she did a Patreon pitch for us.
We didn't ask her to do that. We didn't ask
Jamie,
for that.
The more
that
you say it, the more it sounds like we did. Stop saying that.
I just can't believe she took it of her own accord and just, I mean, so wonderful. So you guys, seriously, listen to Louisa. She knows what she's talking about. And it doesn't take much to sponsor us on Patreon. And you get cool stuff.
Yes. What do they get, Jamie?
Bonus content. We drop stuff in there all the time. At the gestational carrier level, you're going to get video interviews of most episodes. And they are dropped a day early. So you
ad
get exclusive
free.
Inside access ad-free a day early. So not Monday, but Sunday. You can binge your ITOCT episode early, one day early. And you get to see everybody in person. You don't have to just imagine their face in your head. You actually get to see it, which my mother says is an amazing thing.
She sure does.
She does.
So just head over to patreon.com/ovariestalk to join. Okay, let's intro our guest, Jamie.
Oh, this guy.
Ian Jenkins, author, dad, polyamorous.
No less than 5 different people suggested we get him on our podcast. Mm-hmm. So, of course, we had to. So here's the beauty of the story in a nutshell. Ian has two partners, and they are all the dads of their children, and they are all three of them on the birth certificate. Mm-hmm. Yes, you heard that correctly.
Amazing.
It's amazing.
And we were dying to know how they make it work, three parents.
And let me tell you, they are way more buttoned up than...
Well, Jamie, everyone is. Than us. Everyone is.
I can't wait for the day when I sit down and talk to somebody and
someone's
I think
messier
I'm
than us.
So much better than you.
We've got to find that person. That's if you are messier than Jamie and I, please pitch us your story. Okay, Helen.
Helen?
She's not here anymore.
Helen.
As soon as we started talking about the chin hair, she was out. O-U-T.
Jamie, just roll it. She's not going to do it. Just do it.
Roll the tape.
Hi, Ian.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to our ovaries.
Thank you.
So it is morning. It is early morning for you, right, Ian?
I wouldn't call it early. Not in the realm of having young kids, but it's a 7-ish.
Oh, great. Well, thanks for joining us. We're so happy.
I know when
happy.
I saw the early morning times, I was like, all right, we're going to be up. Okay, good. This is
good
because we're always up.
Self.
So we want to start where we always start with our guests, which is the elevator pitch about your family. Are you ready for me to put up the big bad timer? And you ready to do this?
I'm ready to do it.
All right.
You got this.
On your mark. Get set. Go.
Hi, well, I'm Ian Jenkins. I'm a doctor at the University of California, San Diego, and with my partner, Alan, we've been together for 10 years. We met a wonderful other man and formed a triad or thruple relationship and proceeded to have two lovely children. They're now ages 3 and approaching 2, and we're the first family anywhere in the world to have a kid with a polyamorous family on their birth certificate.
Bam! 24 Ooh, seconds.
I can't believe you just summed that up so beautifully. You really have been doing some interviews, Ian. That was beautiful.
That's media training right there.
What can I say?
Okay. Well, there's a lot to pick apart here. First of all, congratulations on so many counts. Congratulations with the kids. Congratulations with being the first polyamorous.
Thank you.
Family to be on a birth certificate. We're gonna get there, but before we get there. I feel like we should start at the very beginning, like with you and, did you say his name was Alan?
Yes, that's my first partner, Alan. We've been together for 18 years.
Wow, congrats. How'd you guys meet?
So Alan was my medical student, which sounds grossly inappropriate, a little bit like Grey's Anatomy, but nothing untoward happened on the rotation. A couple months after it ended, and you know, I was like, this is an excellent medical student, and I had picked him up as gay. I got a message from him asking if he wanted to hang out, and I said, you know, I don't know if this is a date request or a hangout request, but we'll just see what happens. And I ended up making it a date. I brought over equipment for homemade pizza making at his place and a bottle of wine and made us a nice stay-at-home dinner. And that became the beginning of our relationship.
Wow, you were prepared. Now, were you out at work? I'm assuming.
Yeah, I'm a little bit of a troublemaker. So I came out in the school newspaper at my conservative university in Central Virginia. When I was, I think, 19, became a bit of an activist there, president of the gay student group there. I started a gay student group at my medical school because there was none, and started a gay issues panel because there was none. And, you know, being out at work at Boston was sort of a non-issue. That place was entirely welcoming. So we were totally out, but Alan did not know that I was gay because it just didn't come up.
Right.
Part of routine hospital conversations. He actually thought I was this obnoxious straight person.
Oh, that's hilarious. You know? So did he know before you brought the pizza over or?
Oh, yes. He was complaining to one of his friends that I had noticed that one of my colleagues, a long-term colleague, I was like, this person's gay right in front of me. And I hadn't noticed or thought about it. And so I passed him a little note that said, do you think he's family? And Alan was just kind of brushed it off and, you know, but he told his friends, he was like really annoyed to have a straight person asking him about whether this other gay person was a gay person. And they had to clue him in that I was in fact authorized to pass that note as a gay person myself.
But I love that you were passing notes. That's very Grey's Anatomy. I love it.
Also, I wouldn't call you a troublemaker. I would call you a badass for doing all that stuff. So kudos to you. A little rabble rouser.
Yeah, it wasn't too much trouble. Some people have actually done really truly brave stuff. So,
well, it's still brave to do. I mean, what year was that when you came out in your conservative Virginia school?
So mid-90s. I think it was probably around 94 when that happened, early 1994.
That's pretty badass. That's hard to do.
Yeah, it wasn't easy. I mean, there's lots of people who came before me who had a much harder time, but I got some death threats. I got some hate mail. We had some vandalism and one time got attacked in the center of campus, but that all turned out okay. We've got long legs. My partner at the time and I had long legs, so everything worked out.
Wow. Jeez. All right. Well, you've seen a lot.
I feel like you're on the like a lot of firsts. I mean, it's like in all of these, you're an activist. I think that's really fascinating. But I do want to talk a little bit about like when you decided to And so I want to say this first. It's like I may not use appropriate language. So please correct me if I'm because I was going to say open up your relationship to another partner. But I don't know what the appropriate way is to say it. And we want to really make sure that we're doing it in a way that's appropriate.
Yeah, no worries. I mean, we all sort of know that this is not an entirely standard arrangement and we expect people to have questions about it. So like, even if we're just a gay couple and we had kids, people are going to have questions about that.
Yeah.
We don't have ovaries, despite the name of the podcast, that we have to get help and people want to know how that happened. So we expect those questions and we have no problem answering them.
So back to the question, like, when did you and Alan decide, like, was it a happenstance that you met another partner or were you looking or...
I'm a little combination of just like luck, but you know, I was looking for someone else at that point. So we had had many discussions over the years, really, about opening up the relationship. And we had briefly dated a few other people. And, you know, the big concern is, would that destabilize the relationship we're in? And particularly at the point we met Jeremy, we were, you know, 10 years into a relationship. I was actually, you know, very cautious. I may sound like I'm kind of out there and do these other things and had this throuple relationship, but I'm actually a pretty cautious person. And so I wanted to make sure that everything developed really kind of slowly and cautiously because I didn't want to disrupt my home. And I didn't want anyone to, you know, catch bad feelings because like two people could connect faster than the other relationship or, you know, things might not work out or there's lots of things to consider, you know. And when Jeremy actually joined our relationship a little bit more formally and we recognized that this was going to be a long-term thing, he moved into our home, you have to consider stuff like, where is he going to sleep? So Alan and I were in the primary bedroom and he initially moved into a downstairs like guest bedroom. And that sort of sets up a dynamic that might imply that he's like an extra person as and not an equal party to this. So we made it very clear that we didn't think it was that way. And he actually said he wanted to sort of preserve that space for himself. And that was his choice. And I've since, you know, like checked in, like, are you sure? Like we could rotate through that room to make it very clear to all of us that this isn't, you know, there isn't like a primary relationship and then a, you know, secondary relationship. Some polyamorous families are like that. There's a primary partner and then there's like, they're like orbiting partners that, you know, are, you know, they're not nesting is one of the words that's used. So your nesting partner is the one you live with and your other partners you would not. Mm. There's all sorts of different arrangements. Ours is that, you know, all three of us are in a relationship.
All three together. So it's not like you'll partner up with one and that I'm just clarifying for myself.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I just read an article on Facebook yesterday. It was about a couple and their marriage failed. I think, yeah, they got divorced. And then this guy met another woman that he was really taken with. And he suggested to both of them that they form a, you know, a triad. And these are straight women. So it's just him with two girlfriends. And they thought it was awesome. They felt a great like friend connection to each other and non-romantic, but they're both like partners of this man. And they have this whole schedule of like, we'll spend time with him on different nights, time together. And then when we go out, like sometimes they'll all hold hands and you know, catch some stares for that. So there's all sorts of different ways to arrange a polyamorous family. It could be really complicated. Ours is pretty simple. We're just, you know, think about a normal relationship and there's just three instead of two.
Yeah. Robin?
Yeah.
Are you wearing jewelry?
Yep. Yeah, I am. You like? These are my new Ana Luisa earrings. I really love them.
I don't think I've ever seen you in jewelry.
Well,
ever.
Listen, I like a company like Ana Luisa that starts with recycled materials whenever possible, and they always use transparent business practices, and they make jewelry in small batches that are kind to the earth, so how could I not buy them?
Good. Well, I think those earrings look very nice.
Thank you.
Not too much, very versatile. Mm-hmm. I appreciate them. They suit you. But look, I got these cool earrings that are asymmetrical. You see that?
Oh.
They're different on each side and super cool.
Yeah, I know what asymmetrical means.
Thanks. I can't wait to pair these with a nice blouse and a pair of jeans and go out on a date with my wife.
All right. Okay.
I got plans.
All right.
Yeah.
Really planned out. But they do have all sorts of really cool pieces from earrings to bracelets to necklaces. Maxine picked out a cool necklace that she really likes too, and she wore it to school today. She was all proud.
Yeah. I like their pieces. Mm-hmm. Also, they're fair priced with pieces starting at $39, which I'm all about.
Oh,
yes. I can't be spending all my money on jewelry. Can't do that.
Yeah. Listen, folks, go treat yourself and your loved ones. You're going to go to analuisa.com/ovaries, and you're going to use our code ovaries to get 10% off. I absolutely recommend them because they are a great brand and they're making beautiful, sustainable jewelry.
Yeah. So what you're going to do is you're going to go to analuisa.com/ovaries. That's A-N-A luisa.com/ovaries, and you're going to put in our special code, ovaries. AnnaLuisa.com/ovaries. Go get some sustainable jewelry. My only experience with polyamorous families are like the Big Love. Remember that TV show?
Yeah.
He had multiple wives. And then also there was a reality show. A man had three or four wives and they had a bunch of kids. I don't remember what that show was, but I watched that too.
And it feels like it's the perception in those TV shows and like what Jamie's talking about is always it's like one dude with a bunch of wives.
Yeah.
So like, this do you feel new. Like lumped in with, like, do you feel like you're a part of the polyamorous community and then also part of the LGBTQ community and then they're separate things, or, you know, because it's all meshed?
The other question, are you even accepted by those polyamorous communities which are usually very religious?
Yeah, exactly. It is complicated. I don't think there's a P in the LGBTQIA yet, but, no. You know, I think the reality that you're getting at is that people that are weird, or some people would use the term queer, we do all have something in common, which is that sometimes the Jesse Helms of the world are out to get us and legislate against us, and we have common aims as a result of that. So I think it's very important to remember that, and it extends well beyond that for me. I think that all marginalized people, whether it's because of their religion or their race and ethnic backgrounds, all need to band together for their civil liberties. And if they did that, I think we would run the country, and that's where we should be.
I totally agree. Every time I would watch those reality shows, I always wanted somebody to ask them, how do you feel about the queer community? How do you feel about LGBTQ community and their right to get married? Because I remember on the reality show, they were fighting for their right to get married, all of them, legally married. And I always wanted somebody to ask, how do you feel about LGBTQ people getting married? And I wanted to hear them say, we're all about it, let's band together. But that conversation never happens. We never bridge.
There are some bright spots out there, though. So I remember, I think in college, seeing a movie about Ballot Measure 9, which is, I believe, Colorado. And it was one of the anti-gay discrimination bills that was passed kind of early in the legislative cycle. And I think that was one that failed. And the reason that it failed is in large part due to a coalition made up of Catholics who struck it down. You know, like, they voted largely to oppose it. And the reason they did that is because of their collective memory of discrimination by, you know, people in charge who at the time were Klansmen. And they remembered what it was like to be discriminated against in that area. And they had a solidarity with other people. And they said, like, we're Catholic. This isn't our first choice relationship, but we're not, you know, coming to your house to tell you how to live your lives. We all want to have rights. And so it's great when people can recognize that, you know, if you don't want a gay marriage, don't have one, but we can all support each other's rights. Like, I don't want to go to mass, but I completely support your right to do so and to have, you know, no interference with it. So it'd be great to have that. There is an interesting New York article that just came out a couple of weeks ago, and it was on the intersection between polygamy and polyamory. And it looks at how these groups are very different, but have some common ground, because, you know, there are elements in both who would like the right to get married to more than one person, which is currently illegal in the United States. You know, I do see that connection. And I almost think of it as like a rainbow, which is like this straight line of a spectrum. But sometimes you can sort of connect the red and the purple at the other end, it becomes a circle. And so when I talk to people about polygamy and polyamory, one of their major sources of confusion about me is they think that I'm polygamous. And we actually had a bunch of gay people who were upset with us for seeking special rights. And it was so weird, because that's a term that usually conservatives throw at gay people. And this was coming at us from gay people. And I was like, we're not trying to get married, and we're not married, because they thought we actually were married. We're not polygamous. We're polyamorous. None of us are married to anyone. And I explained that, you know, we have this really, really deeply disturbed by most polygamous setups, because what happens in those, as you mentioned, so they come from a conservative religious background. So either like a fundamentalist Mormon group, or sometimes Islamic tradition. And in both of these societies, women and girls don't have choices. They're not allowed to make their own decisions. They don't get to have six husbands. They end up kind of coerced into relationships where they're usually dating or married to an older man that they haven't picked. And sometimes there's tremendous societal pressure to do so. And their choices are restricted within those relationships. That's the exact opposite of what I'm about. I'm about consent and respect for partners and equality. So for us, we actually don't want polygamy, because we're afraid it would lead to the abuse of these young women. Until there's such a time as we can prevent that from happening, we'd rather just not have that option, because we don't want it to be abused. So that's kind of how I feel about it, that, you know, we're actually sound similar, can be confused, but I'm kind of at the other end of a spectrum for that.
You must have to do so much educating of people I mean, you must constantly, I feel like it's a parallel to where we were as gay people in the 80s and 90s, like there was constant questions, you know, before there was more representation. So you must have to do a lot of educating.
It's not so bad, actually. I think the main thing that we do educating people is we just meet them, you know, and we're visible. So people might come over to our house for dinner and they initially like, whoa, this is weird because there's three of you. And then within like 5 minutes, they're like, oh, they're just regular people. We're actually really kind of boring. There's a lot of interesting people out in the world that do interesting things. We're just like trying to wrangle the kids. And, you know, we tend to cook. So that's where the discussion goes right away, is we're making dinner for guests and we're all helping out. And that's it. It's almost like you go over to a family that, you know, they have two kids and you're like, no big deal. And you go to the next family and they've got three and you're like, it's the same thing. There's just one more. That's really how our home works. So people pick that up like instantly, and it's really not complicated. The only question they're left with is, where does everyone sleep? You know, can we all fit into a bed? And the answer is absolutely not. The middle person like would be incinerated. It's so hot.
Oh, that's awful. That would be awful.
Yeah. And you know, I'm 6'3", my partner's 6'5", and the little Alan is a normal height. So we just need like a Cal King bed in a little space. That's the primary education we've done. And otherwise we wrote it and put it down in a book so people can read about it. And one of the main reasons for that book is so people can sort of see that this is really not that strange. And for people to sort of get accustomed to this. So if they come across a family that is polyamorous or just gay or surrogacy based, or a kid from one of those families, that they're just like, oh, whatever, you know, like there's going to be a Muslim kid and there's going to be a brown kid and there's going to be boys and girls and it's all normal and there's a trans kid and everyone's happy and healthy. We sort of add to that of like, accept everyone. Yeah. Like the little heart. And people were concerned that it would like, quote unquote, confuse the kids. And I explained that they're not confused in the slightest and that kids adapt to all sorts of stranger situations. Like, my home was broken. I had to get used to divorced parents and be shuttled back and forth. And people had to explain that to me. And that's a much bigger ask than telling a kid that three adults in the home love them. They have no problem with
more
that.
Love.
That's an extra, you know?
What's wrong with more love for your children? What's wrong with that?
The kids are fine.
Not to mention, all I hear is three different parents who can help. Yes. Like, if you think if a single parent is stretched and is just doing the best they can and like, two parents together are also just doing the best they can. You've got another person to help. I mean, I feel like you'd be at your best because there's more people jumping in.
Spread the jobs, spread the love.
It is actually amazing. This is probably a good time for me to make people jealous about how easy this was.
So
not only did we have great kids, our first child, Piper, started sleeping through the night at 1 month of age.
Don't tell me that,
you
Ian.
Stop it. You stop that.
Yeah, it gets better.
Cool. No, so,
for you.
It was good for us. So normally when someone has a newborn baby, the person who's primarily responsible for feeding, if we do breast is best, is a person who just had surgery or had a vaginal birth, which is sometimes a big deal. I mean, sometimes it's relatively easy for people. It's never simple, but our surrogate produced a 10 and a half pound baby and she had a tear and she was uncomfortable. So she didn't have to do a thing. We gave her an Uber Eats account. We said, go home, put your legs up. Thank you so much for everything. This is amazing. We'll never forget you. And then we had three rested people not recovering from childbirth who all could feed the baby, who took turns. And wait, there is more. The biologic mom is with us. And so we have four parents. And I believe for most of this very early period, we also had grandparents visiting. No one was ever tired. Our bio mom was on Argentina time and they don't even open restaurants for dinner until 9 p.m. So she's like, I'll just put the kid down at one. The overnight parent was already asleep in the adjacent room. And then at one, she'd go to bed. You'd wake up three times to feed the baby and change her overnight. And then 6 o'clock, somebody else would come in and sneak the baby away. And you would just like rest for a couple hours and come back up and everyone felt totally normal. So I cannot stress this enough. If you're contemplating having children, get yourselves another husband. Or if you're a lesbian, get yourself another wife.
I might have to just get another wife at this point. Exactly. I just want to say, Ian, that you are just bringing home everything we say on this podcast all the time. Visibility matters. The best thing we can do and what we're trying to do is just show our stories so that people can see we're just like you. We're just
like you said,
as boring
it's like
as you.
This is just an extension of you having people over for dinner. We're hopefully getting to a lot more people than your dinner. With the story. When did you all start to talk about, like, we want to have kids?
You know, Alan and I had always talked about this, and we also had discussions with some of our other friends. It's a pretty common phenomenon in medicine that you do in your training, and medical school is like super brutal hours, especially back when Alan and I did it. And then residency, I was working like 36 hour shifts, working 100, 120 hours a week. Then, you know, it's out of the frying pan into your attending career. And so a lot of people sort of look around and go, wait, where's my, you know, young adult life? Where did that go? Especially for women for whom the clock is more important.
Right.
And so we had lots of discussions with friends about like, are we going to have kids? Like we have a friend right now we just spoke to who is not. I'm like, she just kind of missed her time. I have another one at work who kind of the same thing happened to her. With Alan and I, you know, we had this additional hurdle of like, there were no women in the relationship. And so there's all this additional activation where you have to like find someone. You know, normally when a couple wants to have kids, they just say like, let's stop using birth control. Or in the case of two women, they say like, let's find a sperm donor, which for some of my friends has been as easy as I know some really nice gay people that we can trust. And, you know, like 15 minutes later, there's a sample is ready to use. Like it's it can be straightforward. Finding someone that you're going to ask, like this is a big ask to carry a child for you. That's huge. And then to, you know, like pick someone who's going to be the biologic mom. We don't normally have to do that. You know, there's just like, it's kind of obvious. It's either one person or in two women's case, it's like two people you choose from. For us, we had to pick a biologic mom. And then when the time came to make embryos, we also had to pick a dad. You know, like there are a lot of choices to be made. And
wow. Out of three choices.
Yeah.
Not just two. Like we have to pick between two of us.
Yeah.
You got three now.
Complicated and costly. And so Alan and I had talked about it. We both recognized like we'll probably get to our late life and wish we had kids. And but it was just we hadn't kind of pulled the trigger and gotten to that threshold of like, we're going to do this. And then Jeremy was really the impetus for that. He entered our relationship and he's like, I want to have kids. You know, it's not an emergency, but this has always been something I've wanted to do. And that was something he had us talking about more, like, when are we going to get this done? And then through one of his friends, we got an offer of embryo donation. And so those were the first two women of all the women that helped us on this journey. And they are absolutely amazing people. They were a lesbian couple who had IVF and they had three kids already. They had a singleton and then a triplet pregnancy. And they their family was done. Like the three kids is plenty.
Yeah, I would say so.
I think so.
That's plenty. And their kids were not like amazing sleepers. So like it was a hard time for them. They're like, we don't have space in our lives for these two embryos that we have. And so they wanted to find someone who could raise them that they would trust, you know, to raise the kids in a way that they would be pleased with, because it's a big ding to hand off kids and then not have control over them.
Yeah.
So
were the embryos already inseminated, like fertilized and all that jazz?
So it's actually, I mean, you can store eggs, but it's a lot easier apparently to store embryos. And so these were created embryos through one of the women and a sperm donor that they had picked out. The same dad as their kids. Their kids are amazing, beautiful, sweet kids. And so we're like, oh yeah, we would
from
totally.
From a sperm bank, the donor was from a sperm bank?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So we're like, we would absolutely, you know, love to have kids like these. They're amazing kids. So we had discussions about it. Like, are we all on the same page about parenting? Do we want to do this? Are we always going to put the kids first? Are we ready to change our lives for the next 20 plus years in a major way and for the rest of our lives? And we decided that we were. And so we started the process of adopting these embryos.
Oh, and did the discussion of genetics come up? I mean, you must have talked about like you had to decide, okay, we're okay with the children not having our genetics.
We were totally fine with that. We think that adoptive families are amazing. Adopting these embryos sounded amazing to us. We're not really wedded to the genetics is destiny thing. And so we were completely fine with that. The only genetics question that came up with is implantation is a big deal. It's expensive. It puts the women through hormone injections and medical procedures. We didn't want to just do this willy-nilly. So we made a decision to genetically test the embryos. And we're glad that we did because we found out one of them had a fatal trisomy, which is like three chromosomes. So obviously we don't want to implant that embryo. And so we went and implanted the other embryo. Our surrogate was like, this is great. I feel pregnant. I've been pregnant before. This is what it's like. And she wasn't. It didn't work out. Yeah. It just didn't implant. And that sensation I'm sure I'm pregnant is coming from injected hormones.
Yeah.
Right. How did you find your surrogate?
Our amazing surrogate, Delilah, was a coworker slash friend of Alan's, and he was discussing our situation and saying like, we, you know, don't like the idea of using an agency, but we're not really sure who to ask. And so we're in this strange place. And she's like, I would do that for you. And he wasn't even fishing, but she turns out to be this amazing giving person. She was like, I have kids. They're an amazing part of my life. They're work, but you love them. They make you a better person. They bring more love into the world. More love is what this world needs. I want to do this thing for you. You need help. I want to give this gift to you. And we're like, you're a special person. And she turned out to be this just like super surrogate. We couldn't have asked for anyone else or better to work with. She was fantastic. And when that first implantation didn't work, she became our biggest cheerleader. She's like, get back on the horse. like, you got to do this again. You know, this was meant to be, don't give up. Cause we were thinking about giving up.
Wow. Yeah. We always say surrogates are like unicorns.
Unicorns.
They're just these amazing beings that are just the most giving and loving. Everyone we've talked to has just been a super, super person.
Yeah.
So you just kept moving. You were just like, we can do this.
We can do this. And we did another implantation cycle. That was the one where we then needed to find a biologic mom because there were only two adopted embryos. And so our next step was, you know, we have our surrogate, but we need now to find a biologic mom. And that turned out to be another friend of Alan's, someone he's known since elementary school, 6 or 7 years old. Long-term
Man,
friends.
Alan is a find. Yes. Alan has got all the connections.
He's got all the, Jeremy had friends. The other connections.
Oh, so. Right. That's true. That's true.
Yeah. And so this turned out to be a great thing for all of us. She's another person that we couldn't have asked for anyone better. Sweet, loving, giving, open to like all sorts of new experiences, loves reading, reads to the kids through a YouTube channel she's created. She doesn't live with us, but a fantastic parent when she is around because she visits. She actually said, you know, normally people get paid to donate eggs because it's not like, I mean, for people who don't know the process, you got to take injections to sort of mm-hmm. overstimulate your ovaries to make a whole bunch of eggs at once. And then these eggs are in these follicles in both of your ovaries. They don't just pop out like a chicken. You have to get sedated. And then someone goes through your vagina with a needle and pulls yep. the eggs out of your ovaries. So it's no small thing to, again, ask. People deserve to be paid for that. And you get wonderful children from it. But she said, instead, I don't want to get paid, but I'd like for you to agree to always fly me to see the children at least once while they're growing up. And we said, yes, we want them to know where they come from. We want you to be involved. That's exactly what we want. And so, you know, she's seen the kids regularly since then.
That is amazing.
Wow.
So she ended up being the egg donor for both of your children.
Yeah. Depending on when you think human life begins, our kids are created at the same time. So all from that first extraction moment, we had kind of two excellent looking embryos and one embryo that looked like it might make it. And we implanted one of the excellent embryos. We wanted to have a girl first. And then we froze the excellent boy embryo and the other embryo and implanted those in a later cycle with a different surrogate. I have to say that we are incredibly privileged to have been able to do it. For a lot of people, especially if they live in an expensive area, this is out of their reach.
Yeah,
A lot of people, especially this terrible pandemic year, are just trying to make ends meet, and having an expensive, you know, set of children is just not even an option. So we feel incredibly lucky for that. If I get the opportunity, I'd like to advocate more broadly for improving access to this, primarily by making the cost lower, because I think that they were exorbitant and unnecessary in many, many cases. But yeah, this was another thing to sort of reassure anyone who's like, oh, these three weird gay guys decided to have kids. Well, these are some of the most intentional and wanted kids around. You have to go through a lot to get these kids. And that's one of the things to remember about the outcomes for same-sex parents. They don't have mistake babies.
Nope.
There's a lot of thought that goes into it. They have it at the time that they're ready, when they know that they have the resources, when their life is in a position to do this, and after a lot of thought, because we have to go through a lot of hurdles to have these kids. And so they have good outcomes because they're very wanted. And we have our three-year-old is approaching four, has not seen television.
Good for you.
Does not drink juice.
Well, because you got three parents. You always got someone to sub in. Tag team.
Don't tell us that. Now you're going to make me mad.
No, I'm not trying to make anyone feel bad. But I'm just saying, we have thought a lot about how we take care of these kids. And we're trying to raise them with the very best, you know, future that we can. And it's great to have three people with inputs on this. So we all three might have ideas about, like, hey, I tried this during the last tantrum and it worked great. I mean, honestly, like, who's in my family? I've got Alan, who's literally received child psychiatry training. Like, he's a psychiatrist who's done work with children. And so he's helping us think about how we can raise an emotionally happy, healthy adult from, you know, the children that we have. And that's an incredibly valuable, you know, consultant to have in the home. Jeremy is this like natural caregiver. He's a zookeeper. He like takes care of little animals. That's his job, and raises them to be independent.
He's like the coolest dad ever. My daughter's going to want him to be your dad.
People are like, we go over to someone's house and we're like, what do you do? I'm like, well, internal medicine. He's a psychiatrist. Jeremy's like, I'm a zookeeper. And everyone's like, whoop. Like, he's a cool one. So he's like a pastor's son. So like this super polite, community oriented guy. And then I don't know, I'm in financing. Like, I go to work and bring home some money so we can afford these kids.
Oh my God. I'm so tired.
Oh my God.
My three-year-old woke up at 4 a.m. again.
Oh my God, really? I was just thinking how refreshed you look. You look completely rested and bright-eyed.
Oh, well, you know what? It's the Thrive Cosmetics Brilliant Eye Brightener. I love this thing. I put it on anytime I feel like less than rested, which is basically every day. I'm so glad I tricked you.
It really did.
It works.
I mean, I love Thrive Cosmetics. Mm-hmm. I mean, their bold, bigger than beauty mission is what I love. For every product mm-hmm. purchase, Thrive Cosmetics donates to help women thrive, like women emerging from homelessness, surviving domestic abuse, fighting cancer. I mean, these are great causes.
It is really great. And you know what I love, Robin? That what? All their products are formulated without parabens, sulfates, and phthalates. And Thrive Cosmetics never tests on animals, which is important. They're Leaping Bunny and PETA certified as 100% vegan and cruelty-free, dude. And I also love their Liquid Lash Extensions mascara. Do you like it?
I do. I was more about your dude. Listen, your eyes look great. I am not going to lie. And guess what? Thrive Cosmetics products are the best, and their bigger than beauty mission is truly inspiring. Mm-hmm. You're going to love them as much as I do. So visit thrivecosmetics.com/OCT for 15% off your first order. This is an exclusive offer you can only get here.
Oh, I love that we have an exclusive offer. I know. So guys, that's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/OCT for 15% off your first order.
ThriveCosmetics.com/OCT.
You see what they did there with the cause? Cosmetics.
Get yourself some makeup.
Listen, I love that you said what you said about how lucky you guys are to be able to do this, because not everybody is able to do this. And I do think it's important that we bring that up.
You also made some intentional choices too of like not going with an agency, and that brings costs down, and that's important too. Mm-hmm, and you got like very lucky that both of them, that you had these three eggs and two worked like on the first time. That's amazing.
That's true too.
For our implanted embryos, we were very lucky that both of those cycles produced a kid, because that's certainly not guaranteed. And we are glad for that, because just from the financial perspective, we had all these additional costs that came from the legal hassles. And so that got to be super burdensome. The reason is, like, if you're a couple and you just need a sperm donor, you just buy the sperm and that's it. There's no, like, the sperm donor has already given up their rights, end of problem. For us, we needed to have a contract with the people who would be involved. So we needed a contract with our surrogate and with our embryo donors. And then for subsequent cycles, it was with our egg donors. But because we're not married and there's three of us, we had three contracts to the women, three contracts to our surrogate, three contracts to our egg donor. So that's already like nine. And then they had to be redone because our attorneys didn't figure out there could be a subsequent cycle. So that just referenced donated embryos and not implanted eggs and whatever. That was a big deal. So those had to be recreated. Our clinic insisted we create a parenting agreement. And we're like, parents are legally defined. We all know what parents are. Are we going to define IVF next? Like, we don't need to do this. But they said, you have to have this because it's an unusual situation. So we had to pay an attorney to listen to all three of us say, yeah, parents mean what parents means to everyone, and write up a document about that. And then we had to, this is crazy, each have a separate attorney represent us to certify that we said what we meant in that other meeting. So four attorneys just to have a parenting agreement. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Holy crap.
And we're like,
it's just like,
you guys are just
money.
Milking us.
Yeah.
But that was pretty painful.
But we will say, I mean, it is important to be as buttoned up as you can be, especially with the state of affairs in our country. And like, we do want to do the best for our families. And sometimes that means we have to do all the bullshit to get there.
And also, especially because there's three dads. It's not typical. So you have to make sure that everything is covered.
We do. I mean, there are a lot of things that we felt like this makes perfect sense. So for example, if you want to have a kid and you're in a straight family, man and woman, you just have a kid. Nobody needs to see a psychiatrist about that. But we all had to see a psychiatrist, like all of us.
We did too.
Because, you have to confirm that you're ready to, in the case of our surrogate, make a baby with your own body and then give it to other people. That's a big ask. And so it's reasonable to make sure that there's not going to be any bumps in the road and that person is going to not be able to handle that, has a history of mental illness and might have a breakdown or be unable to give up the child, and there could be a court battle. Like, you don't want those things to happen. So that made a lot of sense to us. It was the stuff that was extra that really bothered us. Again, so Alan's a psychiatrist, so he knows the issues that are involved. He saw that we had been referred to a bunch of people who were like PsyDs, so they're PhD psychologists, and they were going to order psych testing, which you don't need psych testing. Just talk to someone, make sure you're stable. And that psych testing could have run many hundreds of dollars. And so he knew someone on the list who was a psychologist and someone he trusted who wasn't going to do that. And we saved hundreds and hundreds of dollars by working with that person instead of the other people. But the clinic doesn't care. They don't seem to care anyway. It's like monopoly money to them. And they will like refer you to a psychiatrist or something, and you could pay $1,000 when you could have just seen a counselor for $250. Like, that's not insignificant, especially for many families for whom that's like could be the difference between kids and no kids. So I think that that lack of concern for prospective parents' finances is very disturbing to me. And there were many other examples where our doctor ordered the wrong tests and then billed us for it. And this is extremely common. Everyone who's considering surrogacy should know this. You might need to have things like ultrasounds or hormone levels or STD testing to proceed with surrogacy. And that's all expected and normal. Your IVF doctor is going to do that and bill you for it. But what they don't tell you is that's covered. Like, you can go to your primary care doctor and get STD testing. But instead of telling you that, they just do it and bill you. And they make off like bandits doing work that you had covered somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, hadn't thought about that.
I understand you could have gone to your OB business here, model, but it's wrong. And like, we're okay. We're like two physicians and a zookeeper. Like, we're fine. But, you know, for us, it was an annoyance. And for many people, it's a huge burden. So I think everyone really needs to do the research before they go into surrogacy, or you find out, you know, that you're getting milked for expenses you shouldn't have.
That's good to know.
You should be able to just show proof of no STDs from your primary care.
Yeah. Part of it is like medical inertia is following doctor's instructions, which is a real thing. Another part of it is you don't want to rock the boat. And so you don't want to get into like arguments with someone who doesn't have to work with you about like, hey, are you charging us too much? Like, that's extremely uncomfortable. And so sometimes it's easier just hand over the checkbook. And then the third thing is like, you know, after the first embryo attempts, we were very clear with them that there were three of us and we all wanted to try to fertilize a third of the eggs.
We got to get into that.
Yeah. And so at that point, we were concerned that they would just refuse to work with us or that they could break off at any point, because it's not like the ER where they're obligated to serve you. So we were very concerned that if we were difficult in any way, that we would end up without a clinic. Ugh. Actually, something far crazier than that happened. So
what happened?
We're like, what?
So Megan is this free spirit person who decided to go visit Argentina to learn to tango, like on a trip.
This is your egg donor.
This is our egg donor. Yes, the biologic mom. And this does relate to our surrogacy in a way. So she went to Argentina. She loved it. And she's like, I'm just going to move here. And she doesn't speak Spanish. She just goes down there. She's like, I'll open a yoga business and an in-home restaurant and just learn to speak Spanish in a new country and make my way. And we're just like, wow.
Good for her.
We would never, like, we're so like, you know.
My dream.
Follow the pathway. But she was like, I'm going to go just be this bohemian person and have fun. So now she's like, does Spanish translation and interpretation.
Of course she does.
Super cool, right? So at the time she lives in Argentina, at the time we wanted to collect her eggs, Argentina had cases of Zika. So now there's a concern about Zika. But Argentina is kind of a long place. And there's Patagonia and glaciers. And then up here, there's basically like the Brazilian jungle. It's like touches Brazil and it's, you know, literally the Amazon. So it's a big place. So there were a couple cases up near Brazil, which had more activity, and which is where things were first recognized. And where she lived in Buenos Aires, there was no Zika activity. And this was known, and it just wasn't a factor. So we had talked about this with our IVF doctor, and she had said, let's just go ahead and proceed. We can do testing. It's all good. And then after I did my gamete collection and had all my 20 labs drawn, we had to have some meeting, and we walked into it, and we weren't even really sure what it was the meeting was for. So we're like, I thought we already talked about all these issues. We come into this room. We all sit down. There's someone sitting behind us. And we're like, who are you? And why are you behind us? And she's like, oh, you know, I just help out in the office. And we're like, no, we don't know what that means. What's your job? Like, are you risk management? Are you a doctor? Why are you here? It was all very concerning. And then the doctor starts to say, listen, you're going to need to quarantine Megan for 2 months before we can extract her eggs. And we're like, what do you mean? She has a job. Like, she lives in Argentina. She can't just like ghost for 2 months. She runs a business. And they're like, well, we have to do this to make sure that there's no Zika risk. And I was like, well, hold on. Like, we already talked about it. We said we can do testing. She's not at any risk in Buenos Aires. And I was like, here's the guidelines from your reproductive medicine, you know, organizations that say we don't have to do this. And I've highlighted all the relevant parts because I had studied for this meeting because I'm a medicine doctor.
Yeah.
And why are you giving us this recommendation? So the doctor says, well, we got this from an infectious disease specialist. I was like, from whom? Which one? And well, I don't remember the name. What institution? UCSD. Ah, I work at UCSD. You don't remember the name? Okay. Was it a man or a woman? It was a woman. Okay. Did she have an Italian accent? Yes. This is my friend. There's only one of these individuals at UCSD, infectious disease specialist, female, Italian accent. That's one person. So I was like, ah, so you're talking about my good friend. Tell me what she said.
You're like, hold on, shall we call her?
Right. Proceeds to say that, you know, she recommended this quarantine period. And that's where things got a little bit awkward, because I had spoken to her the day before for half an hour about what we needed to do. And my friend had said, don't even do testing. It's a waste of money. It could cross-react with something that's not there. Just proceed. And now this person's telling me, she said that we had to quarantine Megan in the United States for 2 months and then get tested. And I was like, well, does the quarantine work or does it not work? Because you're not testing other women that live in the United States and the infectious period is far shorter than 2 months. So why would we need to test at this point? So all these recommendations didn't make sense. And he attributed them to the actions of a doctor that I happen to know by sheer coincidence, had spoken to her the day before about this. I was probably the only person in San Diego that she couldn't have pulled that trick on. But I was like, I'm sorry, but nothing you're saying is true. And you need to explain yourself right now. And our doctor clammed up, got very awkward. Some tense words were exchanged and we had to walk out.
Did you ever find out what was the impetus behind that? Why?
Well, and this is we'd have to kind of rely on them telling us what happened or finding alternative sources for this information. So we ended up with this fantastic and accepting doctor. Jeremy identified a new doctor who was willing to meet with us at like 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning right away and help us out, because we were already like injecting our circuit with drugs to do a cycle. Like we were in process. We needed to find someone who could help us. She was like, an amazing supporter for us. This person had been a leader in helping gay families have children, like earlier on when that was a big deal. And so people were upset with him at that time and said, you know, hey, Dr. Blumberg, you should lose your license to practice IVF because you've supported gay people. And he fought through that and continued to help gay people. And so when we met with him, he said, listen, I'm not here to judge anyone. That's not my job. I do IVF. And so if you're coming to me and saying that this is your family and that you have the resources and intention to raise children properly, I'm not here to investigate that or judge you. I'm just here to help you. And we were like, yes, thank you. Yeah. Oh my God, where were you a week ago? And he said something which really blew our minds. He's like, you know, there was another gay couple who went to your first doctor and got rejected. And we, small world, knew those people. They're like 5 minutes away down the hill in our neighborhood. And I had worked with one in our hospital who's another doctor. And so we talked to them and we were like, what was all that about? And they said, we don't know. We're like, we're healthy young adults. We have a healthy young surrogate, you know, an egg donor, and we want to have kids. That's just IVF. Like, they said that we were too complicated to work with. And we're like, what is it that you do? It's like going to a French bakery and asking for a baguette. It's like, this is what you do. So how are we too complicated? And they couldn't explain it. And they just felt uncomfortable and left. And so that made us worry that they were, you know, basically didn't want to work with us because we were in a triad, gay triad, and that they wanted to have some reason not to work with us. But we'll never be able to know for sure. It could have just been a pure risk management decision that they were like, we are freaked out by Zika. And even though there's no risk, sometimes doctors are just irrational about that and they don't want to proceed. So I've seen doctors do similar stupid things where they're just like worried about something that's not going to happen and then, you know, make bad medical decisions. So it could have been that too.
Wow.
We had a long email exchange with them when they really kind of refused to own up to the dishonesty and a number of other issues. And they eventually gave us a little bit of our money back, but mostly just for the tests that they never should have ordered that weren't necessary. Right. And it was frustrating. The only positive was like, I was going through all this and I was like, this is garbage. You people are bad. I was like, this is going to be a good chapter in the book, though. That's the only...
I love it. So this is a chapter in the book?
It's a chapter in the book. And okay, the chapter of the book is called The Fuckery of Dr. Collins.
That's amazing. Oh my...
Fuck Dr. Collins. I'll say it.
Fuck Dr. Collins. Okay, so you find this new doctor who is amazing and wonderful. And okay, so you're starting the process. Now, you mentioned that you, all three of you, wanted to put, what did you say, a third... of your sperm, how did you do this? What did you do?
We talked about it. You know, it was actually a little bit more important to Jeremy and Alan to have biologic kids. I actually had misgivings about the entire process because I think the earth is dying and we need to limit human reproduction.
Oh my God, you're my wife. You're my wife.
Hey, we're in a quintuple now.
Yeah, exactly. Apparently. Exactly. Listen, I'll take your help.
In the end, like there's four parents and we've gone down to two kids. So we're reducing. So we feel okay about it. But I was okay not being a biologic parent, but I like, if we were going to make embryos, I was like, yeah, I'd like to contribute, try. And my mom would have decapitated me if I had not made the effort. So we said, we'll all take a third of the eggs. It's not like it all goes into one big dish.
No.
Yeah. They take the eggs separately, and they actually did sperm injection. So they like hunted for a good sperm that didn't look too misshapen or weird, pop that in each egg. And then you know exactly what you're going to get. They see if the embryos develop for a few days, then they do their karyotype, any major genetic abnormalities, those are gone. And then for everything else, they know the whether it's developing well, and then the gender, and then you get to pick, which is super weird because normally you just get what you get. But yeah, we had to make decisions.
So how many eggs did she get on the retrieval?
I think the answer was like 11-ish. This is the kind of thing that Jeremy would remember. And I turned to him and I had to get him to fill this information in when I was writing that section. But we each got to fertilize several. Okay. And again, it wasn't like we got 25 eggs or something, but we got, you know, a dozen-ish.
It's a good number.
Yeah. And so like 1.5 developed from Alan, 1 from Jeremy, and then none from me. You know, I mean, like at that age, you don't expect to get pregnant every month. And so that's because not every combination is meant to work out. That's quality control from nature. So most of those embryos came from either eggs or sperm or combination. It just wasn't meant to be. And that's okay. We got what we needed.
And you got babies out of what you got.
Yeah.
Which is just amazing and beautiful and crazy at the same time. So that's awesome. Woo-wee, my family ate good last week.
Oh my God, so did mine. Uh-huh. We ordered every plate last week.
So did we.
I'm telling you, I love me a good home meal kit, especially one that is actually affordable.
Agreed.
One meal from every plate is the same price as one cup of coffee. It's
that
like getting, I know, delicious takeout, but more affordable and cheaper.
I love it. It's so great. And you get to spend quality time with the fam while you make it. Mm-hmm. Like, because my kids, I don't know if your kids do, they're older, but my kids get so excited when a box comes in the mail. They don't care what's in it. They just want to start using it, whatever it is. So it makes them want to cook with me, which is fun. Yeah. So it's like they get a gift and I get help and they learn how to cook a little bit. It's fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I love any service that plans, shops, and delivers everything I need to cook a delicious meal right to my door. We know this about me.
Yes.
And did I mention they do all this at a delightful price?
Yeah, they do. I also love that every plate provides easy to follow recipe cards, because it has to be easy to follow for me, and pre-portioned ingredients so you can spend less time prepping and cooking. I hate prepping. You know, and I can never find my measuring cups anyway for some reason. So I can never get the right measurements. Anyway, it's really weird. The one I need is always missing. Anyway,
recipes with
every plate come together in about 30 minutes, which is definitely faster than a trip to the grocery store and starting a meal from scratch. Ain't nobody got time for meal planning in this house.
Well, we don't. That's for sure. We had the sriracha pork stir fry, and let me tell you something. It was delicious. Even Henry liked it. Said it.
Oh, we had that too. It was good. Mm-hmm. Everybody ate. So, folks, you're going to want to save some time and money and try a little every plate in your life.
Fix your life.
Try every plate for just $1.99 per meal, plus an additional 20% off your next two boxes, by going to everyplate.com and entering code OCT199.
You heard what she said, people. That's up to $100 value. So try every plate for just $1.99 per meal, plus an additional 20% off your next two boxes by going to everyplate.com and entering code OCT199.
OCT199.
Can we shift a little and talk about the birth certificate?
Sure.
How did that work? I mean, really is the question.
So we didn't know you could have three parents on a birth certificate, like under any circumstances. And so we had made a decision that we would just pick two of us and those would be the parents. And then we just have to be good to the third person. Because you recognize, like, if something goes wrong, like let's say somebody pulls off the relationship, that person would have no legal relationship to their kids. And that's not a good place to be. They have no obligations to support them, which is bad for the kids. They have no rights to visitation or to make decisions for them, which is bad for the parent. And probably the kids too. So it was just not a good situation. But like, we feel that things are pretty firm, but I think most people who get married also think that. And yet a lot of those marriages end in divorce. So we just wanted to be cognizant of that risk and have some kind of relationship as best we could. But we didn't know it was possible. And we were meeting with our attorneys. They weren't telling us that it was possible. And so what they arranged would be that Alan and Jeremy would be the parents and that I would have a sperm donor agreement with them. So I was sent to an attorney to create a sperm donor agreement. And I was supposed to sort of say, like, this is what's going on and make sure the contract worked for that. So I was telling this guy our story, and he was saying, you can't do this contract. The sperm donor contract is going to say you're a legal nobody to your kids. That's not how this is. Like, it's not a fair representation of your family. I can't, in good faith, support you in doing this. And so I want to say that most of the people that help us out were actually women, amazing women, our embryo donors, our surrogate, our other surrogate, our biologic mom, and this amazing nurse. Props to Ashley for approaching us in the hospital, not knowing us, hearing our story and saying, I'm a super milk producer. Would you like a year's worth of breast milk? So just like amazing women everywhere. That's right. This baby with three dads got fed like almost exclusively breast milk for the first year.
Wow.
Super women everywhere.
My kids with two moms didn't even get that.
It's not easy. But I mean, she had a freezer full of breast milk. So
wow.
So the guys that we say were awesome would be our doctor, who was the welcoming person and skilled clinician, super doctor who helped us out during a difficult birth. And then I would also add to that list this lawyer. And this lawyer is a well-known reproductive medicine kind of pioneer. He was one of the first people in the United States to have a surrogate baby as a gay parent. And there's like a New York Times article about this from 1995, I think. And now he helps other people and works out of LA. And he's a great, great guy. And so he's telling us, like, Ian, don't do this. Like, this is a bad decision. And so he sent me back saying, like, I can't help you with this. And at the time, that was really traumatic because Alan and Jeremy were like, you need to get this done. Like, we're moving ahead. Like, why didn't you get this contract finished? And I was like, well, he wouldn't do it. And I said, like, this is what we want. And he was like, no. And so we had to kind of reconfigure whether it was possible to all three be on the birth certificate, how we would handle that. And that's when other people started telling us, like, yes, California has a law where you can put three people on the birth certificate. And, you know, the judge in this jurisdiction is welcoming and she will probably help you out. And so that became our goal, is to all be on the birth certificate. And we thought that would be kind of easy because it sounds like it would be because there's a law, right? So if the law says you can put three parents on it, we're like, that sounds good, right? Turns out that's not enough because the law is very specific. And it says, if you can show to a court there's been detriment to a child by having this third person excluded, you can add that person later. That's what the law says. So the example would be like, let's say two women have kids and they have a sperm donor who's like a great friend. And that great friend turns out to be a great parent too. And so is always helping out and becomes a major part of the kid's life. And they realize like, hey, we're not all in a relationship, but you're a dad. You're not just like a sperm donor or a friend or an uncle. Like, you're actually a dad. And the kids are starting to wonder like, why isn't this person legally my parent? I want this person on my birth certificate. We love this person. In California, you can go to a court and say like, look, this person did all this stuff for the kid. He's not just biologically related. He's part of the family. We want him on the birth certificate and they'll add that person. Our judge was like, can't do it. No go. There's no kid. Like, we were pregnant right at the time, but there's no child legally. And so we cannot find for you underneath this law. And so in this court hearing, back and forth, our attorneys and the judge were arguing and trying to, you know, come to a conclusion about how they were going to handle the situation. This is going on for like probably 30 minutes at this point. And I was like, we're just going to lose because the judge is like, I'm a lower court. I can't make new law, you know? Like, lower courts can't just decide we have reproductive freedoms. I'll have to find against you. You can appeal me. And I was like, oh my God, like, I don't want a court battle. I don't want to go to some higher court. Like, what a nightmare. And she's like, or you can come back because after the kid is born, you can show me that there's been detriment. Give it a couple years. And we're just like, wah, wah. Like, this is a nightmare.
Give it a couple years.
Yeah, right. Because I mean, there has to be some kind of concrete evidence of detriment. And I was like, oh, we're just going to lose. That was my thought. I was like, we're about to lose this case. And then Alan interrupts the court proceedings. He's just like, no,
come on, Alan.
This isn't satisfactory. Like, the hell with this. And he starts making all this noise. And judge is like, excuse me, are you one of the parents? Do you need to say something? He's like, we do. And he's like, you need to swear us all in. And judge is like, okay. And so she's like, stand up, come on forward. And we all get sworn in. We each had about 2 minutes to testify about why this was important for our family. Tears are being shed. We're going back and forth about like, these are our kids. Like, I just had my hand on our surrogate's abdomen yesterday and there were hiccups and she's kicking. Like, we love this baby. She's part of our life now. You need to do this for us. And we were also laying out the concrete issues here. So some people are like, you just did this to make a point and make everyone else in America who's like straight-laced uncomfortable. And the answer is actually no. We did not do this for any reason other than to protect our family. So we're like, listen, if I'm excluded as a parent, a lot of my retirement benefits are actually in a pension. And if I get killed, it'll go nowhere. Like, it'll disappear. If I'm a parent, my kids have access to that pension until they're 18. You know, what about automatic inheritance of all my other resources? What if I need to take the kids to a pediatrician or consent to a surgery? what if I want to travel with them? I'd be a legal nobody. That'd be like kidnapping. Like, there are all these concrete reasons why we all needed to be legal parents. We also wanted to say to the kids, we're obligated to take care of you. We didn't just have you, see what happens. We wanted to specify ahead of time, we're going to take care of you until you're adults at a minimum. Like, that's what we'll do. We'll do all the things that parents are supposed to do. And we wanted that enshrined in law to solidify that. So that's the stuff we said.
So you
to
were
the
showing
judge.
The detrimental stuff. You were showing it
right away
before the baby was even born.
True, but you again, no legal person, no detriment. So she could not use that law at all. And so we saw this moment cross her face where she's like, "Wow, these gay people seem pretty nice. Like, I can't pick one of them to throw in the trash." Like, I mean, we could see it was like this. You know, she's like, "This is obviously a family, and they should all be parents." And we could see the gears working. There's like this little moment of like, tick, 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 like the Mac wheel, you know, like processing.
Yeah.
And she was thinking like, how am I going to get this done? And then she basically used an existing statute, which was not intended to be used this way. But she's like, listen, I've got a law here that says in California, the parents on the contract for surrogacy are intended to be the legal parents. And that's what we normally do. It's just never been three of you before. And so she had previously in the same court hearing said, I can't use that because it was never intended to be used that way. We know the legislature wasn't planning poly families when they did that. They just meant the two people. She's like, so I can't use that. But then she said, you know what? They didn't specify it. And I'm going to follow the letter of the law and I'm going to let you guys do this. And so, boom, we're all three parents.
Wow. So that's amazing.
Just once again, showing with our families, like they sometimes ride on one judge. If you had gotten a different judge, you could have had a completely different outcome.
We absolutely would have, yeah.
Yeah. I want to know, though, because we've been advised by many lawyers on the podcast that just being on the birth certificate does not solidify parentage. You also have to get a second parent adoption just to make sure and be sure that you are going to have the rights to your children. So most of the couples we speak to go through a second parent adoption. So my wife and I are currently in the process of adopt. She had one, I had the other. So we are doing like a dual
cross adoption. You know,
yeah, we're doing a cross adoption.
I've never heard that concept before. The closest thing that I'm familiar with related to this is that bonkers case, I think from Indiana, where they tried to tell this lesbian couple that the non-bio parent was not a parent, even though they were married. And that went all the way to the Supreme Court, where the 6-3 conservative majority was like, you guys are being dicks. Like, just, they're married. Yeah. Get the hell off. You know, stay out of their bedroom, please. They're obviously the parents. And it was great to see that come down even from this. I mean, it's just a sign of how bad that case was that the current court shot it down. But I didn't know that was a thing. So I'll look into it. But
that's like, it's the interest of
birth, but not proof of parentage.
Yeah, proof of birth. In the interest of just buttoning everything up, and every single lawyer we've talked to says it's likely that there would never be an issue, especially in our country. But you just...
if you travel.
Never know, like if you're traveling
crazy
internationally. Yeah. But then that is going to be a whole nut. Like if you guys decide to go down that route, it's called second parent adoption. It's not called third parent adoption. There's that too.
Will you tell people about your book, the title and where they can get it, and they can hear your whole story we didn't get to?
So the book is called Three Dads and a Baby, Adventures in Modern Parenting, and it's kind of anywhere electronically. There's a great organization called bookstore.org, which is not a behemoth and supports local bookstores, which is a good place to look for it. But it's also on Amazon. You can get it at Barnes & Noble, and there's an electronic book. We're in the progress of picking someone to do an audiobook, which I'm excited about. And you can also find a little bit of our family on Instagram at Three Dads and a Baby with underscores in between. We're not putting current age pictures of the kids out there because we don't want them to become weird media kids. Where else? I have a blog on Psychology Today. I'm going to be writing about family issues, surrogacy, gay issues, trans issues there, as well as some medical issues.
You have been so delightful. This has been such a wonderful conversation.
Yes. Thank you so much, Ian.
Yeah, this has been a delight. Great conversation. It's been a real pleasure meeting both of you and chatting. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you so much, Ian.
Oh, Ian.
Ian.
Don't they just, they all sound like fantastic dads. I love them.
They're really well thought out. And he's super smart, man, that Ian. So, you know, I wish them all the best.
After talking to him about the three dads on the birth certificate issue and whether or not that would be
enough
proof of, you know, proof of parentage, we reached out to Tony, our lawyer pal, who's been on the podcast several times, Anthony, And he's going to be on our live stream on Thursday, the 13th at 4 p.m. Eastern, which you can go to on either Facebook or YouTube. And he is going to be talking about LGBTQ issues that are happening in the legal landscape today. But he is also going to specifically talk about Ian's birth certificate situation. So that's kind of cool. Because
there have been a couple of questions from LGBTQ parents, like, who are not sure they really do need to do.
Think the birth certificate is enough.
And we're not sure either.
Well, I had a pre-thing with Tony, and some of the stuff is pretty darn interesting because some stuff has really shifted since we started talking about this.
We need to get in on that and figure it out.
Tune in.
Now that I'm almost done with my second parent option.
Right? Almost done, Jimmy. But also keep in mind, everyone, that if you can't tune in to the live stream at 4 o'clock on Eastern time, we keep them on our YouTube page. So go to If These Ovaries Could Talk on YouTube and you can watch it there.
And you can still comment there too and add to the convo. And also you're going to want to go get our book, If These Ovaries Could Talk, The Things We've Learned About Making an LGBTQ Family. You can get that at all major retailers. And if you want to buy local, go ahead and check IndieBound. You can also get the audio book that Robin and myself read to you in our dulcet tones. And that's available on Amazon and iTunes. And so that's always fun. And if you do get it, and if you already have it, and you have read it, or even if you haven't read it, don't be afraid to go ahead and give it a good review on Amazon or Goodreads.
Yes.
We like those reviews because it helps us get the book out to an even wider audience. And sure that's our goal.
And guys, we've enjoyed ourselves today, so let's just keep this conversation going. Join us on the social. Ovaries Talk on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. If These Ovaries Could Talk on YouTube, and we told you that's where you're going to find recordings of our live streams. And you can support our podcast, like Louisa told you to do, at patreon.com/ovariestalk. Don't forget about that bonus content.
All right, you guys. We'd be remiss if we didn't give a huge thank you to our sponsors, Anna Luisa, Thrive Cosmetics, and Every Plate. And a huge thank you once again to all of you Patreons who are helping us make this show. We need you, and we thank you so much. From the bottom of our hearts, we thank you so much.
From the bottom of our hearts. Oh my God, I got oddly Irish.
You got so Irish.
Ovaries. Out. Good day. I said good day.
Good day.
If these ovaries could talk, they would say, eggs, ovaries, out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.